We've been discussing this Rasa Panchadaya, and we're on Deksa 34. Krishna had invited all the gopis out for Rasa dance, and then he told them to go home, and then that they should serve their husbands. And then the gopis listen silently, and then they reply to him, but actually you're the husband of everyone. You're the dearmost of everyone. You're situated in our hearts as Paramatma. So you want us to show our affection to our husbands and children and relatives, but we should show affection to you because you're the most intimate with us, the most dear to us. So they're having this discussion. And then this is text 34. Chitam sukena bhavata pritam graheshu yanirvashat yutakara vapi grahita krityaharu paro param nachalatastava paramulad yama katambra jamato karavama kinva. The gopis are replying, Krishna, until today our minds were absorbed in household affairs, but you easily stole both our minds and our hands away from our housework. Now our feet won't move one step from your lotus feet. How can we go back to Braja? What will we do there? So the purport explains that Krishna, he went to Vamshivat on the full moon night of the Sharad season, and he played his flute, and the intoxicating music came from the flute, entered their ears, and they gave up everything. So Prabhupada explains that the whole universe is dancing to the sound of Krishna's flute, and if somehow Krishna's flute, the sound of Krishna's flute, where do you hear the sound of Krishna's flute? You hear the sound of Krishna's flute in his pastimes, if you read about Krishna's pastimes in 10th canto of Bhagavatam, or if you're philosophically minded, there's different kinds of flutes that Krishna plays. He has Venu, Vamshi, and Murali. So Vamshi, you can say the Vamshi is like the Gunakata, and the Venu is like the Rupakata, or Rupam, and the Murali is like Leela, Leela Kata. So if you hear one of these flutes of Krishna, and you, in other words, if you see the beautiful form of Krishna, so that is a type of flute sound, that is called Rupam. You go to a temple, and you see Krishna, Radha and Krishna, or go to Mayapur, see Radha Madhav, Ashtasakis, or Radha Govindaji and Jayapur, or Damodarji, or Radha Raman, and somehow the Krishna's flute comes to you in the form of Rupam. He captures you. He intoxicates your eyes with his form. You become very much attracted to his form. So that is like a type of flute. And then someone may read the philosophy. They may read Bhagavad Gita, describing the qualities of Krishna, the qualities of Ishvara, Ishvara Guna. What are the qualities of God? Or you read Nectar Devotion, or you read some Shastra, and you're also hearing the sound of Krishna's flute is there. It's coming in the Gunavani, or it's a flute sound of Krishna's qualities, Krishna Guna, and you become attracted. And someone else, they may read the pastimes of Krishna. They get Krishna book, and they read Krishna book, and they just become very attracted and very intoxicated and compelled to want to be more, to go to Krishna. So that's why we see that there are different ways by which people get attracted to Krishna. Krishna's all attractive. So the gopis already had pure love for Krishna and Madhurya Ras. So when they heard his flute sound, immediately they left everything. So if we actually somehow hear one of these flutes of Krishna, we hear Krishna's flute sound, obviously we don't have the pure consciousness to hear Krishna's flute sound. That's why Lord Chaitanya says, Chaito Darpana Marjanam. Chaito Darpana Marjanam. The Darpan Chit, the consciousness, the mirror of the consciousness must become pure. A mirror that's covered with dirt cannot reflect the sun. So a heart that's covered with dirt cannot hear the sound of Krishna's flute. But Krishna's flute is there in Kam Gayatri. Krishna's flute is there in the Maha Mantra. That we cannot hear. Just as a mirror, you cannot see visible objects in a mirror which is covered with dirt. So consciousness that is covered with dirt cannot perceive the sound of Krishna, the form of Krishna, the taste of Krishna, the smell of Krishna, all the different objects, the spiritual objects, Krishna's touch, Krishna's taste, Krishna's sound, Krishna's smell. So when the consciousness becomes purified, then you can just leave everything. So the gopis show this example in this verse. They became attracted. They heard the flute and they left everything. And there was no question of going back. They said, you're telling us to go back home and follow these rules of Dharma, but there's no home for us. You are everything. You're Pranavallabha. You're Prananath. You're the Lord of our life. You're the beloved of our life. What do we go home to? Besides, our hands before were working in the home, washing floors, cooking, milking cows, but our hands, they don't want to go, they won't move. And our feet were moving in the village and collecting cow dung, going like this and going to the goshala milking. Our feet, they won't move from here. You've taken our minds, you've captured our minds with our flute. So that's what happens with every devotee in his own way, in his own small way or big way. He somehow becomes attracted to one of Krishna's flutes, the flute of either his Venu, his Vamshi, or his Murali. Krishna's form, Krishna's qualities, or Krishna's pastimes. You ask different devotees, they said, oh yes, somebody took me to a temple and I saw the beautifully decorated deities with garlands and everything. I was so captivated. And then I came back again and again and Krishna, he stole my heart. Dwarkadish stole my heart, or Govindaji, or Gokulananda, or whomever stole my heart. Somebody else said, oh, I got a Krishna book. So that means that we heard the sound of Krishna's flute. Now, is there any question of going back? No. Just like the Giriraj Maharaj, his father, he was bribing him. He said, I'll give you $1,000,000, give up this Krishna consciousness. And then Prabhupada would say, he said, you can give my devotees $1,000,000, or a high post, or position, but they won't give up this Krishna consciousness because they've gotten some taste. They've actually received something. So the gopis, of course, they gave up everything. Their minds were stolen. So that's why we say Murli Manohar. Murli Manohar. Murli, he played his Murli. Murli is a long flute. It's a 3-foot flute. Krishna has a 3-foot flute, and then he has like a 15-inch flute, and then like a 6-inch flute. Venu, Vamshi, and Murli. So the long one is very low. Like maybe you heard in your house, but this morning, around midday, there was someone playing flute here in the Giriraj Mandir. So nice, bamboo flute. So sweet. And first we said, is that a tape? He said, no, it's not a tape. It's some bhakta, or some babaji, or some devotee over there. It was there. He's playing flute. So nice. We're thinking, oh, what is it like, you know, to actually hear the sound of Krishna's flute? Because when we're chanting Kam Gayatri, that is the sound of Krishna's flute. Brahma heard that flute. After so much austerity, and so much penance, and so much determination, I must see God. I must realize who I am. Why am I here? What is my purpose? I'm surrounded by ignorance and darkness. There's no value to anything I see. There's no meaning to anything in my existence. I must realize God. I must perceive God. So in this intention, with this determination, he performed his tapa. And then Krishna was pleased with him, and then he got the Gopal mantra. And then he chanted Gopal mantra, and then that purified his consciousness so he could hear the flute of Govinda, Govinda's flute. When he heard that flute, then he said, yes, I must speak this sound. So it came out as Kam Gayatri. Of course, we're chanting Kam Gayatri, but we may not be hearing Krishna's flute. Because Kam Gayatri means when you hear Krishna's flute, that means that you'll be attracted to the transcendental Kamadev, the transcendental Cupid. And once you become attracted to Krishna, you can never give him up. You'll never leave Krishna. It's impossible. Even we find that due to prabdha karma, or previous desires that are still lying dormant in the heart, that are not yet eliminated, devotees after some time, they go back. But Prabhupada said, even someone who goes back to so-called material life, he won't be a very good karmi. He'll be like a devotee karmi. He won't be a full-on karmi because he'll always be bewitched or be captivated, unless he wasn't much of a devotee. If he had any taste of bhakti ras, or even though it's bhakti abhas, even a reflected taste of bhakti ras, he cannot give that up. Like sometimes people say, yeah, I know I'm in Maya, but I won't take off my neck beads. I still have my neck beads. You know, I stopped chanting my Gayatri, but you know, I love Prabhupada, and you know, I know he loves me, and I'm trying my best, but you know, I can't come to the temple. I'm with, you know, in my Mayas. You know, they say different things, God brothers, whatever. So that Krishna, if you capture him once, then he stays with you. And so now, the purport saying, the gopis came to see Krishna to demand back their stolen property. Because he's Manohar. Har means thief. Mano means mind. He stole their minds with his flute playing. Really Manohar. They said, look, you know, you took our minds. We can't think or function without our minds. Give our minds back. Please, we beg you. And you said, tell us to go back home, but how can we go back home? Without a mind, we can't function. You want us to do our domestic duties and our dharmas, our loka dharma, our street dharma, all our different dharmas we have to do. But without a mind, I'm a fool. I'm a vegetable. I can't do anything. And you've taken my mind. So you please give our mind back. Then they say to Krishna, we'll only get our minds back if you accept us and enjoy with us in conjugal affairs. But then to this Krishna may have said in reply, gopis, just go home for now. Let me consider the situation for a day or two, then I'll give you back your minds. In other words, I'll keep your minds, I've taken them. Don't worry, I'll consider your request, but you go home now and do your work. But they'll say, how can I work? Can you work without a mind? Is it possible? Mind, it means thinking. Mind means feeling. Mind means willing. Willing means movements of the senses, control of the senses. Without a mind, you can't control your senses. They must be there. They say the man's, you know, he's mindless or he has no control. So then reply to this, the gopis might argue, our feet refuse to move one step. So please give us back our minds and accept us and then we will go. So now the same verse in Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada is also, of course, giving us these stories in a summary form. And we've tried to follow along and see where Prabhupada's translations are. And many of the students are here regularly. They, like myself, we find that Prabhupada's translations are exceptionally sweet and special. Dear Krishna, this is the same verse that we just read. Dear Krishna, as women we are certainly satisfied when our hearts are engaged in domestic affairs, family affairs. But our hearts have already been stolen by you. We can no longer engage them in family affairs. Besides that, you're asking us to repeatedly return home. And that is very appropriate instruction. But unfortunately, we have been stunned here. Stunned means we can't move, frozen, stunned. Our legs have no power to move a step from your lotus feet. Therefore, even at your request, we return home. What shall we do there? We have lost all of our capacity to act without you. Instead of engaging our hearts in family affairs as women, we have now developed a different type of lust, which is continually blazing in our heart. And then it goes on to the next verse. In this verse, until today our minds were absorbed, you stole our minds and our hands from our work, we can't go back. So in this regard, Vishwanath Chakravartipad, he explains, what the gopis are actually implying here is that our minds were absorbed in household work. But what it means is, you know, you said, until today our minds were absorbed in household affairs. And Vishwanath says, no, actually what they're saying is, because our minds were never absorbed in our homes, we don't care if they burn down. We don't care if our houses burn down or they prosper or whatever. Actually, our minds were absorbed in that which brings about the perfection of all of our grihas. See, because the word in the Sanskrit here is chittam sukhena bhavata paritam griheshu. So griheshu means household. So but griha also means the indriya grame. Grame means the senses. So they're saying, actually, until today our minds were absorbed in the household affairs means actually our minds were absorbed in that which brings about the perfection of all of our senses, or grihas. And what is that? When we meditate on your loving service. So we were home, but we were meditating. We weren't doing our housework. Maybe our hands were, but our minds were absorbed in meditating on our grihas. Like you said, go home and do your until today, grihas, griheshu. So our minds were absorbed in serving you, serving your senses, and without which all our senses have become useless. Verse 35. Sinchanga nastadar adaramrita purakena asavaloka kalagita charichchayagnim Uchedvayam viraha yupayukta deha janena yama pariyo parivim sakete. Dear Krishna, please pour the nectar of your lips upon the fire within our hearts, a fire you ignited with your smiling glances and the sweet song of your flute. If you do not, we will consign our bodies to the fire of separation from you, O friend, and thus like yogis attain to the abode of your lotus feet by meditation. So this is the further pleading of the gopis that Krishna will accept them. Prabhupada says, now we request you, dear Krishna, to extinguish that fire with your beautiful smile and transcendental vibration emanating from your lips. If you do not agree to do us this favor, we shall certainly be burned in the fire of separation. In that condition, we will simply think of you and your beautiful bodily features and give up our bodies immediately. In that way, we think it will be possible for us to reside at your lotus feet in the next life. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajat yanti kalevram tam tam aiviti kanteya sadatad bhava bhavitaha. Krishna says, whatever thought you have when you leave your body, smaran bhavam, that you will attain in the next life. So they're saying, okay, if we cannot serve you and please you because somehow or another our love is not genuine or we're not qualified and you don't feel to accept us, then we'll meditate on you in separation. And then, when we die, we'll die thinking of you in separation. And because we're thinking of you when we die, then in the next life, we will attain you. Because whatever you're thinking of when you die, that's what you attain. Or that's whom you attain. So this indicates their determination to attain the service of Krishna. We see this quality. They're very determined. They're ready to throw their lives away. They're ready to burn in the fire. So of course, in Upadeshamrita, Rupa Goswami explains that determination is required. Utsaha nischayat dharyat. Determination. We must be very determined to attain the goal of Krishna consciousness. The goal of Krishna consciousness is pure love of God, Krishna prema. But sure, it's difficult. And we want it like this. We want it just like this. But it may take many lifetimes. Are we ready to practice many lifetimes? Anyway, whatever it takes, janmani janmani ishvari bhavatad bhaktir hoitaki. Lord Chaitanya said, don't worry, don't be so impatient. Birth after birth, just be a Bhagavat bhakta. Just serve Krishna. It may take birth after birth to attain that prema. But let's come to the platform, nadanam najanam nasundaram. No desire for wealth, women, followers, anything in this world. Become pure in heart. Then we become pure in heart and actually practice bhakti, because bhakti begins when we're liberated, actual bhakti. Then when you're practicing, you'll feel, you'll go forward and you'll get some taste and reciprocation from Krishna, and you'll say, well, Krishna, I haven't attained you fully, but maybe next life. But we must be very, very determined. Determination comes by satsang, by association, and by sincerity, sincerity from previous life. Yesham tantakatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandva mohanirmakta bhajantimam drida brataha. To have drida bhajan, to have very determined bhajan, you have to be pure in heart. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, yesham tantakatam papam. When the papam is removed from the heart, then the determination increases. So now our determination less. When you associate with pure devotees, you see how determined they are. And then you become determined. And then as you practice more bhajan and chanting, you increase your purity. And when you become more pure, you become more determined. That's why we observe different days for purification. Janmashtami, Radhastami, Ekadasi. These are special fasting days where we make a vow in the morning. Oh, today I will fast from grains and beans. Or today I, you know, only eat fruits. Or different vows devotees make. No drinking or eating anything, nirjal. And that's a vow, a sankalpa that you make in the morning. Then you pray to Krishna and you try and you hear and chant all day and you try to uphold that vow. So that increases your determination because you become pure. by observing very strictly these Ekadasis and Janmashtamis, your consciousness becomes pure. When your consciousness is pure, it increases your power of determination. Well, see how the gopis, we can, of course, there, this, there's Rasa Tattva is way beyond us. This is the Nitya Siddha Parikars of Krishna, eternal associates. How can we understand their bhavas and feelings and sanchari bhavas and so many things that are going on at this high discussion? But at the same time, by hearing about their exchanges, it purifies, it creates bhakti within the heart, and that purifies our mind. And then by trying to draw some lessons, because everything is a lesson. We can learn from everything and from everyone if we're receptive. So they're teaching us this principle, determination. And sometimes we see even the animals teach us lessons about determination. We see some bird, he's trying to build a nest, and he catches some straw and he puts it up there, and the fan keeps blowing the straw down, and he keeps going picking it up, and you think, what a stupid bird. Of course, bird has bird brain. Yeah, a very small brain a bird has. But he's so determined, this mother bird and the father and mother to make a nest in this place. The big fan is blowing. And every time they set down a few pieces of straw, it blows it down on the ground. And they pick it up. I watched in Delhi Temple one time. And eventually they got enough straw up there, so it became heavy. They put some mud up there or something. It became heavier than the fan. And a couple weeks they had a nest. And a month or so they had a family. So they were determined. That male and female bird were very determined to build their nest. I couldn't believe it. So we have to be so determined that, okay, Krishna, somehow you attracted me. Now, that sweetness, don't let me become soured. Don't let the sweetness of Krishna's attraction become soured by some environmental factor. Some onslaught of your prarabdha karma, some avalanche of your previous karma, or some bad association or meetings of people. Don't forget the sweetness of Krishna. If you ever heard any of those flutes of Krishna, if any one of those flutes of Krishna ever touched your heart, the qualities, the sweet qualities of Krishna, Rupa Madhurya, or the sweet exchanges of his devotees, the Leela Madhurya, or his teachings of Bhagavad Gita, his philosophy, his sweet philosophy, if it touched your mind, touched your intelligence, your heart can dance to one flute, your mind can dance to another flute, your intelligence can dance to another flute, and Krishna plays all three flutes. There's three flutes, because there's body, mind, and soul, right? There's the body, the mind, intelligence, all these things are there. So Krishna's playing his flutes and attracting all of them. Sankarshan, Krishna. So don't forget that. Try to let that get covered over. So read the next verse. Ya yam bujaksha tavapara talam ramaya tatashanam kvachit aranya janapriyasya apakshma tat prabriti nanya samakshamanja tatum stoya biramatiya Bhattaparayama. The gopis speak further. O lotus-eyed one, the goddess of fortune considers it a festive occasion whenever she touches the soles of your lotus feet. You are very dear to the residents of the forest. And therefore, we will also touch those lotus feet. From that time on, we will be unable to even stand in the presence of any other man, for we will have been fully satisfied by you. So, Prabhupada, his translation is that, dear Krishna, if you say, Prabhupada doesn't say just, O lotus-eyed one, he says, dear Krishna, if you say that if we go home, our respective husbands will satisfy the lusty flame of our desire, very nice, the lusty flame of our desire, we can only say that that is no longer possible. You have given us a chance to be enjoyed by you in the forest, and you have touched our breasts once in the past, and which we accepted as a blessing, as did the goddesses of fortune, who are enjoyed in the Vaikuntha lokas by you. Since we tasted this transcendental enjoyment, we are no longer interested in going to anyone but you for the satisfaction of our lust. Very sweet. You can see Prabhupada's explanation. So that's Prabhupada. I'll read Prabhupada's again, and then I'll read the other one again. You know, you feel like Prabhupada said, that these books are my realized, these are my bhavas, my ecstasies, these purports. And Prabhupada once, Prabhupada was reading Krishna book in his room in Mayapur. The devotee came in and he was smiling and he was reading Krishna book. And the devotee came in and said, Prabhupada, what are you doing? You're reading Krishna book? He said, yes. And why not? He said, well, you wrote the book. I mean, I didn't know you read them. I thought they were for us or for distribution. No, I didn't write these books. Krishna wrote these books, and he did such a good job. He did such a good job. So later, at another time, Prabhupada said that these purports of my books, they contain my devotional ecstasies. My devotional ecstasies are contained in these purports. So Prabhupada, he's a Nityasiddha resident of this domain, and he's seeing these things and he's writing about. So he said in this verse like this, Dear Krishna, if you say that if we go home, our respective husbands will satisfy the lusty flame of our desire, we can only say that is no longer possible. You have given us a chance before, and once in the past, to be enjoyed by you in the forest, and you have touched our breasts, which we accepted as a blessing, as did the goddesses of fortune, who were enjoyed in Vaikuntha Lokas by you. Since we have tasted this transcendental enjoyment, we are no longer interested in going to anyone but you for the satisfaction of our lust. And now in this new edition BBT, O Lotus-Eyed One, the goddess of fortune considers it a festive occasion whenever she touches the soles of your lotus feet. You are very dear to the residents of the forest, and therefore we will be able to also touch those lotus feet. From that time on, we will be unable to even stand in the presence of any other man, for we will have been fully satisfied by you. So Prabhupada's purport, practically speaking, his translation explains a whole other angle. Here it's all future tense. The goddess of fortune touched your feet. We may be in the future. Here in Prabhupada's translation, they're saying, once before, and what the gopis are saying, what Prabhupada said, is the goddesses of fortune, they used to hold your feet and massage your feet. But once before, you took our feet, you took our feet on your breasts. We took your feet on our breasts. We didn't massage your feet with our hands. They're too hard. We even thought our breasts were too hard. We put your feet on our breasts. We did that. You did that once in the past. So now, you've staked your claim. We belong to you. You've marked us. Your footprints are on our breasts. The Hang Ten. It's like they have this kind of clothing with some symbol of feet on it or something. So just like we have this story of Bhrigu Muni kicked Vishnu. Bhrigu Muni was testing who is God. So he went to Shiva, his brother. He went to Brahma, his father. Then he went to Vishnu and he kicked him. And then sometimes in the Stapadis make murtis. Murti Stapadi, they put a footprint on Krishna's chest. Have you ever done puja? You've seen like in Boston, other deities in Berkeley and Boston and Mayapur, the same mold deities there. And they have a footprint of Krishna, of Bhrigu Muni. That's a footprint of Bhrigu Muni on their chest. But those that are a little bit different angle of vision, they say, oh, that's Radharani's footprint. He's always wearing it there. Like some people have a tattoo on their arm and says, I love mom. I love mom. Or they have some serpents and some snakes on their, you have some... no, everyone. So Krishna has a tattoo also. He's got on his chest. So when you buy the murti, it's carved into the chest of Krishna, a tattoo of Bhrigu Muni's foot. So Krishna, he that footprint is there. So the gopis are saying, oh, he already, we have his footprints on our chest. What's the question of anyone else satisfying us? So the Prabhupada says he gave us everything in his books, right? The next verse, 37. Chir yat padam bujarajas chakrame tilasya lavvapi vakshasi padam kila britya justam. Yasya svavikshana utanya sura prayashas tadvad vayam chatava padad raja prapana idasyam. This is the melody. Shri Yat Padam Bujarajas Chakame Tulasya Labvapi Vakshasi Padam Gila Britya Justam Yasya Savikshna Utanya Sura Prayasas Tadvad Vayam Tadchatavapad Pararaja Prapanana. Text 37, chapter 29, 10th canto. And gopis go on. Goddess Lakshmi, whose glance is sought after by the demigods with great endeavor, has achieved the unique position of always remaining on the chest of her lord Narayan. Still, she desires the dust of his lotus feet, even though she has to share that dust with Tulsi Devi, and indeed with the Lord's many other servants. Similarly, we have approached the dust of your lotus feet. In Prabhupada's translation, Dear Krishna, the lotus feet of the goddess of fortune are always worshipped by the demigods. And although she is always resting on your chest in the Vaikuntha planets, she underwent great austerity and penance to have some shelter at your lotus feet, which are always covered by tulsi leaves. Your lotus feet are the proper shelter of your servitors. And the goddess of fortune, instead of abiding on your chest, comes down and worships your lotus feet. We have placed ourselves under the dust of your lotus feet. Please don't reject us, for we are fully surrendered souls. They say, similarly, we have approached the dust of your lotus feet for shelter. And Prabhupada said, please don't reject us, for we are fully surrendered souls. In purport, the gopis here point out that the dust of Krishna's feet is so ecstatic and enlivening that even the goddess of fortune wants to abandon her unique position on his chest to share with many other devotees a position at his feet. Thus the gopis urge Krishna not to be guilty of a double standard. Since the Lord gave the goddess of fortune a place on his chest and also allowed her to seek the dust of his feet, he should do the same for them, his most loving devotees, the gopis. After all, the gopis plead, seeking the dust of your lotus feet is perfectly justified, and you should encourage us in this endeavor, not try to send us away. That's a nice purport. It must be Vishwanath's purport. When the gopis met Krishna, All the different gopis were there. The sadhana siddha gopis who attained perfection by their sadhana and had just first entered into Krishna's pastimes. The municharis and the rishicharis. The dandakaranya sages who had finally gotten gopi roop and a chance to take part in Krishna's pastimes. And the nitya siddha gopis like Chandravali and Radharani, all were there. Radharani's party and the opposition party, Chandravali. So these series of verses, although the names aren't given, the acharyas indicate who spoke which ones. So this the second group was speaking this verse 36, which we heard. That was spoken by Chandravali. The other ones were spoken by Radha's gopis. This verse is spoken by the Shruti Rupas. The personified Vedas spoke this verse in opaque above. Maybe that's another discussion, but they're speaking this about. Don't give a double standard. Even Lakshmi, she left Vaikuntha to come to Vrindavan to do tapasya, and she went to Balvan or Lakshmivan, Bilvavan on the other side of Yamuna. There's the forest Lakshmivan, and she's doing tapasya there, so she can get the dust of Krishna's feet. She's on Narayan's chest, but she sees, what ecstasy is in Vrindavan. Vrindavan is full of the dust of Krishna's feet. If I can just enter Vrindavan, if I can become a gopi or enter the rasa dance, I can have that dust on my head, or I can hold Krishna's feet on my breast like the gopis. So she's performing this austerity to get that dust from Krishna's feet. But she can't get it, because she has this mood of opulence and mood of Aishwarya Bhav, it's called. She can't give up her ego, her man of being the queen, of being Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune. She can't take that humble identity of just being a lowly gopi, a cowherd girl of Vrindavan. So she's there doing austerities. And the Brijvasis go there every year in Poshamas in January, I think it's January, before Vasant Panchami, and they go and bless her every Thursday. all the Brijvasis go to Lakshmivan on the Thursday, because that's the day of worshiping Lakshmi. They say, "Oh Lakshmi," and they give her some sweets and they sprinkle some dust over there from Vrindavan. They say, "We bless you," because Krishna told that you go only by getting the blessings of the Brijvasis will you enter Vrindavan. Only by the blessings of the Brijvasis. Just like yesterday we heard from one speaker said we should not offend anyone. Don't offend the Brijvasis, don't offend anyone. Right? So, because they are the givers of devotion. Devotees give devotion. Where do you get devotion? Where do you get bhakti? Are you born with bhakti? You get bhakti from the Vedantas, bhakti Vedantas. From those devotees who have bhakti, they give. It's called bhakti lata beach. We're wandering all around the universe, looking. Ramanda Brahmate Kohan Bhagyavana Jiva. Guru Krishna Prasade by Bhakti Lata Beach. The Guru gives. The Guru gives that seed of bhakti. And then he teaches how to cultivate, how to develop. That comes from Guru. From a bhakti guru, from a prema guru. So on our own we don't have. Otherwise we would be on our own, so much we should have developed. We should have developed. So this is required, the mercy of Krishna. Because he sees the sincerity, the sincere desire. So, in this verse 38, now the munis are speaking, 38 through 40, is the municharis are speaking. These are all spoken by the sadhana siddha gopis. They were like us. They practiced sadhana and they attained perfection. Now they're in gopi form and they came from Maharas dance and they want to dance with Krishna. They want to offer themselves for Krishna's happiness and pleasure, which is the perfection of devotion. Without any selfishness, totally selfless surrender, Atmanavedanam. They want to offer everything to Krishna. Now Krishna's saying, "Go home. You know, I don't need your service. It's okay, go home. Everything's covered." So they're feeling very sad. You know, all of our lifetimes of sadhana, we were great rishis in Treta Yuga. And now we've attained our siddhadeya, our vastu siddhi. But somehow you're frustrating our desire for service. What to do? So then, so they say this verse. Tanna prasida brijarata tain grimulam prapta visunja vasitis twadupasanasha twatsundara smitani rikshana tivrakama tapt atmanam purusha bhushana dehi dasyam. Purusha bhushana dehi dasyam. You are the Purusha Bhushana. You are the ornament. You are the ornament of all men. So they say, now these two verses, 38, 39, and 40, so gopis say, "Therefore, O vanquisher of all distress, please show us mercy. To approach your lotus feet, we abandon our families and homes. We have no desire other than to serve you. Our hearts are burning with intense desires generated by your beautiful smiling glances. O jewel among men, please make us your maidservants." So this is the sadhana siddha gopis. They're munis, the dandakaranya sages. Now they finally attain their spiritual form, vastu siddhi. And their desire, when they were sages, they saw the smiling face of Ram, and they became attracted with conjugal feelings. They said, "Oh, we want to be his lover." This is told in Bhagavatam. So then they desired like that, and they did their bhajan in Treta Yuga. Then they were blessed to take birth in this Dwapara Yuga, when Krishna was having his pastimes on a planet where he's having his pastimes. And this is it. This is the moment. This is the happening. This is the moment. So now, okay, now you know, we're also sadhakas practicing sadhana. We haven't attained siddhi. They were sadhakas practicing sadhana. They attained perfection. The blessings. So this is their mood. They said, "Look, we don't have any other desire but to serve you. Please accept us. We just want to be your maidservants." That can be taken in different ways. It says, well, let's see our Prabhupada's translation of the same verse, 38. "Dear Krishna, you are known as Hari. You destroy all the miseries of all living entities, specifically those who have left their homes and family attachment and have completely taken to you. We have left our homes with the hope that we shall completely devote and dedicate our lives to your service. We are simply begging to be engaged as your servants. We do not wish to ask you to accept us as your wives. Simply accept us as your maidservants. Since you are the personality of Godhead and like to enjoy Parakya Ras and are famous as transcendental as a transcendental woman hunter, we have come to satisfy your transcendental desires. We are also after our own satisfaction, for simply by looking at your smiling face we have become very lusty. We have come before you decorated with all ornaments and dress, Bhushanam. But until you embrace us, all our dresses and beautiful features remain incomplete. You are the Supreme Person. Now if you complete our dressing attempt as the Purusha Bhushana, or the male ornament, then all our desires and bodily decorations are complete. Because that's in the Sanskrit, it says, Taptatpanam Purusha Bhushana Dehi Dasyam. Purusha Bhushana Dehi Dasyam. Dasi. Dasyam means dasi. Means servants. We are your maidservants. We want to be your maidservants. We don't want to have a formal relationship with you and a demanding relationship. Husband-wife is very demanding. Wife always has to be there. Husband has to be there. It's open. It's a free relationship. You can just love us and leave us. But please, please accept our seva, accept our love. We have no other desire. If you want to love us and then break our hearts by not being present before us, okay, fine, we'll cry for the rest of eternity. But at least embrace us once. Ashlishiva paravatam panashtramam adarshanam mamatam karotiva itatatava vidurantu lapanto matprana natas tu saivan aparaha. Please. So this is, they're praying like this. And Prabhupada draws it out very, very specifically. So we have so many ornaments. We have beautiful golden bangles and conch shell bangles and blue sapphire bangles and golden rings. And we have so many pearl necklaces and diamond necklaces and coral necklaces. So many ornaments. Bhushana. Bhushana means ornaments. Sadhu Bhushanam. The ornaments of a sadhu. But until you, when you embrace us, we want you to be hanging from our necks. We want your arms hanging from our necks. We have all these necklaces of gold and pearls. But when you wrap your arms around our neck and your arms, that becomes another necklace. And that becomes the ornaments of all ornaments. That becomes the Purusha Bhushana Dehi Dasyam. I mean, Dehi means to give. So they're saying, Purusha Bhushana Dehi. You become, oh Purusha, oh Supreme Enjoyer, oh Supreme Male, oh Supreme Person. You become the ornament. You become the ornament of our bodies. Then all of our dressing attempt and all of our necklaces and gold bangles, then they'll have some value. Then they'll have some meaning. Otherwise, what is the point? It's decorations for a dead body. Right? Simply decorations for a dead body. If body dies, and then they are taking to the funeral home in the Christian tradition, so they put all nice rings and a Rolex watch and all kinds of jewelry, and everyone comes and looks at granddad, and he looks so rich and opulent, he's got his ruby rings on. What's the point? A dead body with nice rings and things. So they're saying, these are all decorations. Our bodies without you, you're the Pranavallabha. You're the Prananath. You're the life of our body. You're the life of our heart. If you are not ornamenting us, if your serpentine arms are not wrapped around us, then we are, you know, the vine of our love is incomplete. There's a purport to this verse. So this is, now keep this in mind, this is spoken by this Sadhana Siddha Gopis, the Rishis of Dandakaranya. When Sri Krishna was born, Gargarishi predicted he would manifest all the opulences of Lord Narayan. The gopis now appeal to the Lord to fulfill this prediction by being merciful and granting them direct service, just as Lord Narayan awards direct service to his loving devotees. The gopis emphasize that they did not give up their families and homes with the hope of securing a higher pleasure from Krishna. They are simply begging for service, revealing their pure-hearted devotion. The gopis think, if in the course of your pursuing your happiness, we somehow or other become happy by seeing your face, what is the harm in that? In other words, you're enjoying us, enjoying our bodies, enjoying our service, and somehow, when you're enjoying us, if we glance at you and we see how you're smiling so happily, we see how happy you become by my service, and if I relish that, seeing you happy, or if I smile also, is that a harm? Is that sinful? We just want to become happy by seeing you happy. That's the meaning of selfless love. The beloved says, oh, if I can make you smile, that's a perfection of my life. But the materialist, he's thinking, I somehow, you know, you have to make me smile. You have to jump, you have to dance, you have to act and make me smile. Scratch my back, rub my shoes, you know, brush my shoes, whatever. Then I'll smile. Oh yeah, you please me. But this selfless love is you want to see, I'll do anything, I'll give anything, I'll sacrifice the whole universe, the whole world, everything I have to make Krishna happy. Krishna Chakravarti comments on the word Purusha Bhushana. Oh, jewel among men. The gopis mean to say, the Thakur says, oh, jewel of all males, please decorate our golden bodies with a dark blue gem of your limbs. So our body is like gold, and your body is like a blue sapphire, Nilamani. So please, please decorate our golden bodies, Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi, Gaurangi, right? Kanchana Gaurangi. That Gauri, Radharani, has golden body. So please decorate it with this blue sapphire of your form. So this is the petition. But there's a nice point we can draw from this topmost, highest philosophy to our practice of devotion. We are in distress, O vanquisher of distress. Please give us your mercy. So we're praying to Krishna. I'm distressed. I have so much distress, so much anxiety, so many problems, so many obstacles in my mind, so many difficulties in my life. Please show us your mercy. And I'm coming to you. I'm only coming to you to ask for mercy. I'm not going to devatas. I'm not worshipping devatas. I'm not going to my relatives. I'm not going to the material world, to the business world. I'm at your lotus feet. I'm a bhikshu. I'm a beggar. Prema Bhikari. I'm begging for your love, your loving service. And I've abandoned these sadhana siddha gopis, these rishicharis are saying, I've abandoned my family and my homes. I have no other desire but to serve you. So that is, that's every devotee's mood to some extent. We may have a lot of other desires. They can say they have anyabhilashita sunyam, dhyana karma dhyanavritam. They are really anyabhilashita. Abhilash means desire, and anya means none other. Anya abhilashita shunyam. Any other desire is shunyam. They're void, they're destroyed, they're free of it. They have one desire. That desire is Krishna's desire. Krishna wants to be happy, I want you to be happy. My desire, you want to be happy? That's your desire? I want to make you happy. That's my desire. So they are truly saying in a genuine way, I have no other desire. So we, part of us, every sincere devotee has, in the privacy of his own bhajan, or in the solitude of his own journey back to Godhead, in a solitary moment, he's cried out and saying, actually Krishna, I'm a wretch, I'm fallen, I have so many bad qualities, so many bad desires, but please, actually underneath all that, in my heart of hearts, I really want to love you. I really want to serve you. I want to give you everything, unequivocally, without holding back. But somehow or other, I have so many, you know, this anartha and that anartha and this desire and that desire, all these overlapping layers and shells and coverings. I'm not able to express it. But every once in a while, in a solitude of prayer or in a silent moment of reflection, we express, the heart itself speaks. The mind becomes quiet and the senses become quiet. And the heart of the sadhaka speaks his sincere heart's call. Krishna, please, I want to love you. I want to serve you. Isn't it? Everyone's had this experience. So they're saying like that. They're saying that they are simply begging for service, revealing their pure-hearted devotion. So this is pure-hearted devotion. What does pure-hearted devotion mean? What is the meaning of pure-hearted devotion? Shuddha bhakti, prema bhakti. Pure-hearted devotion means simply begging for service that's pleasing to Krishna. Simply begging for service. That is pure-hearted devotion. So while we're chanting mala, what are we chanting? The names of Radha and Krishna. Yugal Nam. Hare Krishna, Radha and Krishna together. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna and Radha separated. Then Hare Krishna, Krishna and Radha together. Right? So they're together, they're separated, they're together, they're separated. They're having their pastimes in this arrangement of this rasa lila of the Maha Mantra. His Rasastali, the Mahamantra, Radha and Krishna are having their pastimes. And we're chanting, and we're taking part in that Rasalila, because they're, the Rasalila is Krishna and Radha and 108 gopis. The head bead, the center bead is Radha and Krishna in oneness. Is Mahaprabhu, Radha and Krishna. Then 108 beads are the 108 gopis. So they're always dancing in a circle. The beads, the mala we have makes a circle, right? A japa mala. It's a circle, it's a mandala. It's a rasa mandala. The gopis are dancing there. So we're going from one gopi to another gopi. Oh, please engage me in the service of the ones at the top. Who's at the top of your beads? You start at their feet, and then you go to all the... You start at their feet looking at Radha and Krishna at the head bead. Oh, Radha and Krishna. Right? O Radha Raman, O Radha Krishna, O Radha Sham, then please give me your service. I'm begging you with pure hearted devotion. I'm begging you, please give me your service. I want nothing else but your loving service. At every moment, awaking and sleeping. And then we see, but how will I get this service unless I get the mercy of devotees? Where are the devotees? Oh, there's one here. And we turn our heads to the side from Radha and Krishna, and then we see Lalita. And Lita Saki's there, and Vishaka Saki, the big beads. Then we go, oh Lita, we chant, we hold the bead. Oh Lita, please, I beg you, please engage me in the service of Radha Raman at the top, you know, the top head bead, the head bead, you know, head bead? Center bead. Then Lita, she's a little slow in replying. And we say, anyway, let me go to the next one. And Vishaka, oh please give me, and then you go all the way down 108 gopis and you go to the back, then again you're back at Radha and Krishna. Oh, I'm back. You don't cross over, because you know you're in the circle and you have to stay in the dance and proper in the circle. So then you go back, you dance this way, then you dance that way. And each time you're begging, thousands and hundreds of times, every gopi, please, oh pure devotee, oh eternal associate, oh Nitya Siddha Saki, please engage me in the service of Krishna. Please, I'm begging you. Then you finish your rounds, and then the temple commander comes and says, oh Prabhu, can you do some service, you know, for Krishna, cutting some vegetables for the offering? Well, what are you talking about? I'm a busy man. I can't do any service with you. So we're begging so much for service, and then when some service comes, we run the other way. As soon as service comes, we run the other way. So what does think? You know, the gopis are thinking, well, look, you're begging us all for service, and then we reciprocate with your desire, and we give some service, and then you run away the other way. And someone's knocking the door, hey, give me a job, give me a job. And the guy opens the door, yes, okay, I'll give you a job. Oh, wait a minute. And he runs away. I don't want a job. Now, why are you banging on my door? You're banging on my door all morning. Give me a job, give me a job, give me a job. And then I open the door. I say, what do you, you know, you want a job? I have a job for you. Oh, you have a job? What? Oh, well, wait a minute. I'm busy. I have to go to the store. I have to get something. I'm tired. I'm sleepy. I'm this and that. So this is pure-hearted devotion. So begging for service is our daily, our moment-to-moment activity as a sadhaka and as a siddha. They're siddhas. They're in Vastu City. They're in spiritual bodies and they're begging Krishna, hey, oh Krishna, please, why are you playing games with us? No, because he's testing. He's testing. He's churning. He's churning their hearts with his teasing words. He's teasing them by his word juggling. Oh, go back home, you know, this is not the proper place, not the proper time. Neither this place is proper nor the time. Oh, you have your husbands and you have your duties and you have, and this is your religious and this is our dharma and I'm a young brahmachari and what will people say? And he's juggling words and teasing them. He's actually churning their hearts like churning milk. Milk is churned. And what comes from the churning of milk? Butter. Nice, thick butter. And then when the butter is produced, then Krishna will take it. Krishna will eat that butter. Because he's known as Makanchur. Makanchur means he steals the butter. But he only steals the butter from those confidential places. Butter is hidden in a dark place. In a dark storeroom in the houses of the gopis. In a dark storeroom in the gopis' house is very dark to keep the light out, keep the flavor. Very dark inside a clay pot. In a high place, inaccessible place, that butter is there. And that butter represents Prem Makan, the pure love of the gopis' hearts. They store it there. They have their husbands and they have their children, but their special love, Their special affection is reserved for Krishna. And they keep it in their storerooms. And they're waiting. When will that naughty boy come and steal my butter? When will that Damodar come? When will that Madhav come and steal my butter? My butter means my prema. Because when I'm churning this, I'm singing, Govinda Damo Dara Madhaveti, Govinda Damo Dara Madhaveti. Please come. Oh, Damodar, please come and take my heart. Please steal my heart. Oh, Makhanshor, please come and steal my butter. My butter is my heart. I'm churning my heart. I'm churning this milk, but I'm churning my heart. Krishna, 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 Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare. Do you ever hear the sound of churning? It sounds like chanting. Hare Krishna, 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 Krishna. You know, when they're churning butter, you know, when the wooden thing is going inside the milk, you know, inside the cream, it's Krishna, 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 Krishna. So this is chanting. Our hearts are like, they should, first they're like steel, then it has to become softened, then it becomes like milk. By drinking the nectarine teachings of Bhagavad Gita, by drinking the milk of the cream of the Vedas, and by drinking the cream of Bhagavad, the Bhagavatam cream, and the milk of Gita Upanishad. So you explain the Shankaracharya's glorification of Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna was like a milkman, and Krishna was like a cow, and he was drinking the milk of the teachings of Lord Krishna, the milk of the Bhagavad Gita, Gita Upanishad. It's in the beginning of our Bhagavad Gita. There's prayers by Shankaracharya. The Prabhupada quotes in the introduction of Bhagavad Gita. You can see that. Nice analogy. Krishna's the teachings are like the cow, and Arjuna's like, you know, he's milking and drinking that milk. Gita Upanishad. So with this milk and with this cream, if we drink this and we chant Hare Krishna with a pure-hearted desire, begging Krishna, please give me service, please give me service, please give me service, then that heart will become pure, and that milk of the heart will become thick, and that thick milk will become butter, and that butter that's hidden, that makan that's hidden in the confidential secret corners of your heart, in the innermost core of your heart, where you're hiding that love for Krishna. Krishna will come one day. He'll come as Damodar. He'll tie you up and he'll steal that. He'll steal that. He'll come as Makhanshor and he'll steal that butter. He'll steal your heart. He'll steal that love out of your heart. And he'll eat that and relish that and enjoy that. Then he'll give you the remnants. And then you'll experience the pure love of Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.